one.
What were you mumbling?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
No idea. Modest. You have some ideas. I've heard some of your ideas. We've been eating. We've been discussing. We've been talking about a lot of different topics, actually, around privacy, around surveillance, around who's looking after our data and whether we should trust them, around encryption, and just around each individual. It's a lovely little international group of people who also like to eat and drink with others. A symposium, and it was you, John, who thought that we should call this a symposium because, in the true sense of the word, it was about eating, drinking and discussing.
Quite right, yes. It's the biggest gathering I've been to of this group this year. Initially it was just us two, but it's grown and grown. In the same way that I think the issues around this event have grown as well. So we've had an amazing discussion. I think we, as a very timely moment with all the NSA and Snowden affair kicking off, and Bradley Manning, the trial still carrying on, and Julian Assange still stuck in the Ecuadorian embassy. So I came to this with some questions. I mean, we asked the question, are we living in 1984? And I think, in a sense, we are, but in 1984, probably on steroids, in that I think Big Brother now is not a person, can't be identified with a person or a leader or a political party anymore, but I think is would be more to do with something like big data. But the other heartening thing, to counterbalance the pessimism perhaps one might feel at this moment, is that whistleblowers are springing up everywhere. So in the sense, if Big Brother's everywhere, Winston Smith is everywhere, seems to be everywhere and potentially everywhere. So that's what I'll be watching, I think, for the next year, is seeing what happens in terms of people on the inside of all these data systems actually changing sides. And I think this is a rising phenomenon.
It's interesting how you hint towards it being an us and them. Who are they?
I think quite clearly in my mind, the one dominant force in 2013 is capitalism itself and the corporate state, corporatized state. But at the same time, this may be the last flicker of the candle, in that you're seeing a worldwide trend of citizens rising with very different agenda all over the planet to resist largely the forces of globalization, I would say. Because I think the question of data and surveillance, which is how we started these discussions, is really tied into the whole question of the line between nations, the globe, political parties, corporations, and I think it's a process of globalization, which is, I think, very much still being debated and being struggled over.
If we look back to 2007, when we first... I mean, how did we first come here?
It was through our activities as photographers, the fact that we were noticing that CCTV cameras after 9/11 were springing up everywhere, and it was becoming very difficult to actually move about with a camera in any city, particularly London. So it was that issue around that time, not just us, but other photographers, I think, began raising this question of surveillance. But then we realized very quickly that surveillance, that visual surveillance, is a very small part of a growing industry.
Interestingly, I guess there is good news in the way that photographers seem to, some of their rights at least, seem to have been vindicated, because police are more aware now of what people's rights are around carrying cameras, and in fact start carrying cameras themselves, and we see them strapped to police officers' heads videoing all the time, and it does seem a bit weird to stop somebody with a camera when you are constantly streaming. We're on the cusp of the release of some really interesting devices which we will wear. I'm not just talking about Google Glass, of course. I'm talking about, in fact, the more discreet cameras from Autographer and the Momoto, which will be able to continually take photographs and stream them to our phone for sharing or collecting into a video package, which can then be uploaded. Are you sharing more now online, despite everything we've become aware of, than back in 2007?
Like a lot of people, I've come to the point where I'm uncomfortable with the whole thing, but I don't see a way around it. So I'm very careful, I think, with what I share. But in terms of the photography, which is what we came back to, I'm thinking, actually, I prefer photography to these, with a camera out on the streets is a much more honest way of photographing, in that everyone is aware of what you're doing. And I'm not quite, there are issues around the whole Google Glass and Momoto and Autographer sort of technologies, which I think are unresolved.
I think they will become very evident, the issues, the more altercations they are, with people saying, are you photographing me right now, for example? Yeah. It's kind of interesting in a group of 14 people who are very, you know, obviously into this discussion, that, you know, maybe only one person says, no, I'd rather actually not be identified due to, you know, in a way, being associated. It's not a bad thing. I know you guys, and it's not a bad thing being associated with you, but it might come back to haunt me in the future.
It's not so much the question of people feeling uncomfortable at being watched. It's also the issue for me, particularly with Google Glass, that you're seeing the world through the filter being placed literally in front of your eyes by Google. So while you're looking at the world, the information you're receiving, almost as a way of replacing your own personal thoughts, is, will it be advertising popping up on your screen? I think it will be information to do with which coffee chain to go and drink coffee in, or which, you know, shop to shop in, or where there are bargains. So I think I object to that more than the other aspect, which is being watched.
Mm. So you're okay with your image in some ways being taken out of context?
I, to tell you the truth, I'm not really, I never have been that worried about that. I was more concerned with being obstructed from creating my own content, or being able to circulate through a city unmolested.
I'm with you with that. It's also interesting, you know, the act of lifting a camera to your eye and the clicking of the shutter button. It is a very obvious action.
Yes, exactly. It's like taking out a notebook and writing something. Mm. It's like taking out an audio recorder and recording something. It's not automatized, and I think the fact that it's automatic, I have issues with. But you said earlier, returning to the sort of them and us, I don't think it's a question of them and us anymore, because we're seeing very clearly, you mentioned the police, you mentioned whistleblowers, that the distinction between them and us is in a way becoming a question, it's going back to politics again, it's becoming a question of individual freedoms and conscience. And groups, even the police themselves, I think, are at a moment of crisis. And you said they weren't clear about the laws they had to enforce. Well, they weren't. They were caught in the middle as much as anybody else. So I think organisations are feeling threatened as well. So it's not them and us, it's systems and human beings, perhaps, which is the issue. How much of our lives do we want to be automatized and corporatized, and the two go together?
I think so much has happened in the past 6 years, and yet I think we're still on the cusp of some of the biggest change we're likely to see in a very long time, especially, as you put it, if it is between the systems and the humans, you know, not wanting to go all Terminator and Skynet, but our very own Skynet is on the doorstep in the shape of mass adoption of IPv6 and what we're lovingly called the Internet of Things. And I talk about this and I do say that there are some serious concerns around, you know, our personal privacy and where what data is being used and how our life is going to be filtered for us, as you put it. But the convenience, John, the convenience.
Yes. but you should always be suspicious, perhaps, of a life that's made too easy for you. I think that's the perfect control, is control you actually enjoy. I think taking control of anything, especially your own life, is never going to be easy. But that's I don't know, I find that a more preferable way to live your life and to be answerable for your life than to leave it to some technology.
How do you feel about people that don't pay any mind to this, who say, "Oh, it doesn't bother me," and you know, I'm happy for my... Well, they won't say that they're happy for their ignorance to be bliss. But there's a lot of people that really just don't have... It's hard work looking at all the CCTV cameras and being aware of them. It's hard work up until recently when my life depended on it, for example, in Syria, when I had to think about the metadata connected to the media I was sharing and how this could well put lives at risk. And I'm so glad that I share as much as I do so that I was in a position to understand that. What about those that don't understand that? Do you think that we need to educate, we need to share, or do you think they'll just find out?
I don't think people need educating. I think there's the rub, there's the difficulty, is that we, to be able to survive during very difficult economic times, if you have a job, you don't have time to think about the, you know, normal 9-to-5, well, I don't know if that exists anymore, but I'm, you know, a job, full-time job. You don't have time to worry about all these things. And if you start worrying about all these things, you're not only costing yourself money, because it's more difficult to sort of do things consciously rather than just tick the box and have things done for you. It costs you money and also time to do this. And I think, you know, we're all in debt. Everyone's in debt. And you don't have, and that is the great success of the sort of marketization, I think, of lives, is that we are too busy to worry about these things.
I'm sure we're going to have many more conversations before the day is out. It's been absolutely fascinating, and thanks for being a part of this for a period of time.
Thank you, Christian. I mean, this is brilliant. It's wonderful that so many people have turned up and that we've had such a, you know, high level of discussion and everything. I think this thing is now gathered momentum, and it's largely thanks to you, your grasp of the technology and the sort of way you've used it in a very conscious way, I might add. Who knows, next year when you're wearing your Google Glass and your Momoto, what we'll be saying.
I'm hoping they're both hacked going to my private channels. We'll see what the thing is. I can't help but think we're stood, you know, literally 2 feet away from a beautiful rosebush, and you know, a number of feet beneath that rosebush lies maybe the remains, at least a little bit of DNA, I would hope, of Eric Arthur Blair. And you know, if you could reform that DNA to his lying position right now, I can't help but think there would be a little smile on his lips.
We keep coming back here because Eric Arthur Blair was able to create narratives, which is what we're sorely, in such a great way, in ways we're sorely lacking at this moment. And we've been talking a lot today. Maybe you can ask others about this, but this question of how we tell our stories in context, how we create our own narratives and hold on to the ownership of those narratives is a burning issue at the moment. So thank you, Eric, and thank you, Christian.
Thank you. Yeah. George Orwell, Eric, Arthur Blair, and happy birthday to you.